Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the January 21st edition of the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Matt D'Agostino and Wes Chang, and we've got a little extra juice, Wes, thanks to Mr. Qadir Copeland on Saturday, delivering a knockout punch against Miami, a 72-69 win as Copeland nails a three at the buzzer. We'll dissect all of that was Syracuse and Miami, and we'll also talk about what that means. Again, it's beginning to be that time sooner rather than later, what the game means for Syracuse moving forward as we approach March. Wes, quite the game. Nicely done by him, hearkening back to Pearl Washington to get a little Syracuse buzzer beater at the Dome.
Yeah, and if Qadir Copeland wasn't one of your favorite players on the roster before the Miami game, how could he not be now? And the one thing I want to point out is it shows the evolution of this sophomore class under Adrian Autry. Judah Mintz, the sophomore, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, rolling to his right, finding Copeland, the sophomore, for the game-winning three. I think there's a lot of confidence that you need to be able to step into a shot like that and knock it down. And Copeland's been such a critical part of Syracuse's success to this point this season. So, you know, I'm just really happy for him. He said it a couple games ago, and, you know, we had a great recording on our Instagram feed, but, you know, he's just said he stuck through a tough freshman season. He's now reaping the rewards of that, and he's got a good coaching staff behind him. So he's certainly a fan favorite. Good for him. Really great win for Syracuse.
Make no mistake about it. It was a pretty high-level game that was played yesterday by both teams. Miami was a little bit down with injuries, to significant players and foul trouble to other players early on in that one. But especially the second half, I mean, it seemed like both teams were really throwing haymakers out there, a three here, a three there, both teams diving all over the place, and just back and forth, highly contested. I would say probably the most entertaining, even regardless of the finish, but probably the most entertaining half for sure, and maybe even entire game of Syracuse this season.
Yeah, Matt, the moment of the game that I want to call out is when Matthew Cleveland goes down on the fast break, 7:54 left in the second half, right down Broadway for an uncontested dunk. And Adrian Autry calls timeout with the orange down. It was 55-48 at that point. And I think if you polled 10 Syracuse fans at that point, at least seven, if not eight of them, would tell you that Syracuse wasn't going to win that game. And talk about high level and the competitiveness and the back and forth of it. Out of the timeout, they iso Mintz. He knifes his way into the lane and hits that tough layup. You know, to me, that was the key play of the game. I know we're going to be talking about, you know, Copeland's three for the rest of time, as we should. But Syracuse doesn't have a chance to win that game at the buzzer without that Mintz layup, because if he misses that, Miami comes down the floor and hits a shot. Suddenly the lead is now, you know, 9 or 10. So I think it really shows kind of the mental makeup of the team. And again, the back, and it allowed them to have that great back and forth down in the final 8 minutes of the game. So that competitive back and forth that you were mentioning doesn't happen without Syracuse regaining its composure.
Yeah, you are a very smart individual, Wesley. I marked down that exact play as kind of a pivotal point in the ball game. The other one I had marked down was in the first half, or was it maybe early second half? It tied it at 39, where you've got Judah Mintz finding a cutting Malik Brown, who then kicks it immediately out into the corner to Copeland, who misses the three, but Brown chases after it, tips it out to Mintz, who finds Starling in the corner for a three, at which point Starling had seven straight points for Syracuse. But that was kind of a microcosm of the hustle, the energy, the effort level that we've been seeing from Syracuse a lot this season. And so I thought that was a good turning point, or at least a benchmark kind of play for what the game was and what inevitably this season has kind of been about for Syracuse at this point. But we mentioned Mintz and Starling connecting on that play. The two of them were sensational yesterday, Wesley. Mintz goes for almost a triple-double. He gets, 10 points, 8 rebounds, career high, 13 assists. And Starling, knocked down six threes on the way to 22 points. Certainly lifting Syracuse in regards to getting a victory on Saturday.
Yeah, Matt, I think we were talking about this. I think it was three podcasts ago now where we were talking about JG Starling really struggling with the shot and looking lost in the offense. I think he went through, you know, seven or eight consecutive games where he didn't have double digits. And that's not the case anymore. I don't know what he worked on with the coaching staff over the last couple games, but as you mentioned, 22 points, six three-pointers. I mean, this is a guy who's shooting below 30% from three just a couple games ago, and he really came alive. I don't know what happened. I don't know how he worked on his shot or his confidence, but if he can be that consistent threat from there, Syracuse is a completely different team. And, you know, I know that Juna Mintz only had the 10 points on 3-for-11 shooting, but again, I think to your point, Matt, 13 assists. I know, you know NBA and NBA scouting better than I do, but I feel like this is a game like this where he dishes the ball and he's not looking for a shot and he's finding his teammates. To me, I think that's more valuable to his NBA draft stock as a point guard. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, so NBA scouts will tell you the easiest thing to fix on a player is a shot. You know, so if that's his weak point, you can work on that. That is muscle memory. That is reps. That is form. That is dissecting film. That can be worked on. That can be improved. You've seen numerous examples of that over the years. But his ability to get to the rack, his ability to draw contact, his ability to find the open man, and his ability to play defense all shape up in his favor. So if you look at mock drafts, he's still a second round guy, which maybe that's what he ends up being. But he's a guy who could stick for sure. And again, it's not like his shot is terrible. It's just not something he utilizes very often to the point where it's an asset for him. It's kind of an afterthought. He'll take the shot. He's certainly more reluctant to shoot from three than he is to get into the paint and throw one up. But I think it's definitely an example of, you know, the guy has a wide skill set and it's pretty balanced. And somebody could certainly find value with that in the NBA. And I don't know if you caught it. I know he's your guy, Malik Brown. But Eric Diebendorf asked yesterday, mentioned that Malik Brown is an NBA-level talent, which I found interesting. A double-double again yesterday, two assists, two steals, and a block to go with it, and a ton of winning plays that we saw from him. But I thought it was interesting that Diebendorf was as bold to say Malik Brown at this point is an NBA level talent, but I like to see it.
You can't argue with the stats and you can't argue with the production. You know, not every NBA player has to be a star. In fact, every NBA player should be a star because you need those scrappy guys. You need guys like Jason Hart. You need guys that are, you know, going to play defense, that are going to rebound and don't want the ball and don't demand the ball and are scrappy around the rim for those putback points, right? You can't have five guys that are, you know, like Stephon Marbury and Steve Francis. You saw how that experiment worked for the Knicks back in, I'm going back 15 years ago for our podcast listeners. I hope you guys are following me, but you can't have too many of the same player. Malik Brown is a perfect glue guy. He's a perfect fit for that. Now, I don't know if he has the athleticism for the NBA to continue that kind of production there, but if Eric Diebendorf is saying he knows a lot more about basketball than you and I do.
By the way, good for Diebendorf getting on a few of these broadcasts. It's been fun to listen to him. He's obviously a guy who knows the Syracuse community, the Syracuse program pretty well. So fun to see him on the broadcast and listen to him as he's starting
on the Juice on the Cuse podcast, Matt. He's been a frequent guest on this show. He's appeared at least three or four times on this show as well.
Very much so. He's certainly turned himself into a very well-rounded individual with many media accolades, the least of which is the Juice on the Cuse podcast, I'm sure. What does this mean going forward? Before we get to the tournament resume, Wes, I was looking at the minutes played yesterday on Saturday for Syracuse. Mintz, Starling, Brown, and Copeland all played more than 30 minutes. But after that, you had Chris Bell, 28, another double-digit game for him, by the way, in terms of points. Benny Williams played 16, Justin Taylor, 14, and Kyle Cuff, 5. So really an eight-man rotation yesterday, and we see the four guys getting 30-plus minutes. With the injury to Nyheim McLeod and the inexperience of Peter Carey and Hema, is this what we should expect going forward? We've lauded the fact that Adrian Autry has gone 9 or 10 deep, but is this eight-man rotation kind of where he might settle on now with the injury to McLeod?
Yeah, I think they already had a 9-man rotation prior to the injury, so cutting him out and going to that 8-man rotation makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Peter Carey, again, I mentioned this, I like his athleticism, but he's not ready yet for ACC play. And Hema, I don't think, has that frame or that athleticism or the skill set right now to play big minutes in the ACC. So, yeah, I think this is the 8-man rotation that he's settling in on. They can spot, you know, Hema and Peter Carey at various minutes. But I like this rotation. Adrian Autry really trusts his guys. And again, when is the last time you were able to say Syracuse had an 8-man rotation? It's been, I think, a decade since we've really been able to say that. So I actually really like that there's 8 guys that can play that you can, you know, plug and play, mix and match. And they've had pretty good results from it.
I'm interested to see if Benny Williams gets more time as a big man or one of the bigger guys in that rotation, because we almost saw it on Saturday with Malik Brown getting into some sort of foul trouble in the second half. But beyond him, you've got no bigs really in that 8-man rotation other than Malik Brown. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets into foul trouble at some point in the future. Where does Adrian Autry turn? Does he go to Benny Williams more at the 5, or does he bring in a Peter Carey or a Hema, or, you know, and how many minutes can he steal from those guys and get, you know, some sort of solid production until Malik Brown can get into the game? It'll be interesting to kind of see. But what are your thoughts on what this win from Saturday does for Syracuse moving forward?
Yeah, Matt, I'm going to nerd out to the NCAA resume, as we love to do. Maybe I should pull out an Excel spreadsheet so you can get excited.
You have glasses around your nose somewhere? You can just pull them down. This is what we love.
Well, you know, looking at the net rankings now, so Syracuse comes in 80th in net. Miami was 63rd. So with the win, Syracuse moves up 11 spots after the win. They're now 69th in net. That's a quadrant 2 win for the Orange. So Miami only drops one spot to 64. So that's a really solid win for the Orange. It probably should stay as a quad 2 win. And Matt, just looking at the remainder of the schedule, the quad 1 games are there for the taking. They have at least 3 more quad 1 games at Wake Forest, home against North Carolina, and at Clemson. And then there's another potential for a quad 1 game at NC State. They're currently 78th in net. So the chances are still there. And again, Syracuse has no bad losses. They're undefeated in quad 2, 3, and 4 games. The one other thing I wanted to point out, which was, Jim Stickschulte texted me this yesterday, is that for the first time all year, Syracuse is projected by T-Rank to have more than 20 wins on the season. So again, plenty of season left for Syracuse to get back in that bubble discussion. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Syracuse needs to beat a majority of the peer schools around it if they're going to make the NCAA tournament. Miami was one of them. They pick up the win.
I'm glad you're looking at net rankings. I was looking at KenPom stuff this morning as well. And Syracuse now 4-5 against teams above them in the KenPom rankings. By the way, Syracuse went up 12 spots this week between a couple of wins between Pitt and now Miami. They move up 12 spots to 74, but the wins, Miami yesterday, Pitt twice, and Oregon, who sits at number 55, is the best win against a team above them in the KenPom rankings. The losses, Virginia at 60, but then Gonzaga is number 20, Duke 13, UNC 7, Tennessee 4. Again, no real shame in losing to those teams. But the one, as I was looking at the calendar coming up, home games against FSU and NC State, which are right around where Syracuse is, and then BC, who is a little bit below them. But I was surprised to see Wake Forest at number 36 in the KenPom rankings. That'll be a road game for Syracuse coming up in a little bit. I think that one is kind of looming as another kind of litmus test to see where they are, and one that could kind of shift things in one way or the other for Syracuse.
Yeah, I think that Wake Forest game is going to be high noon for them. If they can pick up a quad one win against them and maybe have 2 or 3 quad one wins on the resume come NCAA Selection Sunday, I think Syracuse actually has a pretty good chance, and you're going to start to see Syracuse, if they win that game, be in the projections for, you know, those last 4 in, next 4 out type things.
Yeah, so Wes, a 72-69 buzzer-beating victory for the Syracuse Orange on Saturday against Miami, one of the marquee wins of the season for them thus far. But on the other side of the break, Wes, you had a chance to talk to 2024 quarterback A.J. Miller from Westchester County in New York. We'll see what he has to say about the upcoming season for the Syracuse Orange here on the Juice and the Cuse podcast.
For For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast, Wes Chang here with you. And as we approach the February signing period, Syracuse is continuing to build its 2024 class, the Orange handing out a small number of offers recently. And one of them was to Rye High School quarterback A.J. Miller. We welcome him on the program now. A.J., how's it going today?
Oh, it's going. Nothing much.
Yeah, so A.J., you were extended an offer last week by Syracuse offensive coordinator Jeff Nixon. So congratulations. How's it feel?
Unreal. I was in the middle of my econ class, or actually that's not true, not the middle, I was at the end of my econ class, and my phone's ringing, and it's from Coach Nixon. I'm like, oh. So I was like, yeah, do you mind if I step outside? And he said, yeah, no problem. And then he told me the news. You know, he's coming from the Giants. I'm a Giants fan, speaking a lot. He said he's been speaking a lot to Coach Nunes, Coach Fran, and they're excited. They're ready to make the move. They have a light quarterback room, and they want me to come in there and learn and be ready to play. So I'm excited.
Coach Nixon coming from the Giants. Obviously, they have Tommy DeVito, who used to play at Syracuse. Did you guys talk about coming into college and then getting ready for that next level?
No, we didn't talk much about that. We were more talking about the way he sees me working into the offense, the type of offense he's trying to run, a lot of spread, but with the RPO, a lot of passing, drop back, quarterback, which is exactly what I am. We were more talking about the offense, and you know, that's what really gets me going.
So, AJ, I know Coach Nixon is new to Syracuse and you're just getting to know him, but what did you think about him after speaking?
I've met Coach Nunes and spoken to Coach Nunes a bunch. We have a very, very good relationship. That was actually my first time speaking to Coach Nixon on the phone. He's brand new, obviously, but we really hit it off right away. We both he played at West Virginia. My grandparents are from West Virginia, so we have that connection. And then we just were really, you know, we're both two guys who love to talk the ball, and he's really excited to air the ball out. And that's exactly what I do best. So
AJ, I know your recruitment's really taken off recently. LIU, Monmouth, Wagner, Fordham, now of course Syracuse, they've all offered you at the end of your season. So how's it feel to have this offer list?
You know, it's a good feeling. As everybody knows, high school recruiting's been really hurt by the transfer portal. Everybody's on their sixth, seventh year. So to be able to have an offer as an 18-year-old high school senior is a tremendous opportunity that I don't take lightly. And I know a lot of kids are still looking for those opportunities. The fact that I've been blessed with a couple of these opportunities is really exciting, but, hard work pays off, and it's a good feeling for sure.
So AJ, you got the Syracuse offer. The February signing period is coming up. Where does Syracuse rank in your recruitment, and is a decision coming soon?
I am planning on signing in February. I'm not sure where yet. Syracuse definitely is up there. I still have to take my OV at Fordham, and I have to take my OV at Syracuse. Definitely a decision will be coming soon, given that February is approaching.
AJ, we'll get you out of here on this one. Are you planning on taking an OV on the 27th at Syracuse?
I'm not. I couldn't make that OV, unfortunately, but me and Coach are figuring out a date that works. And I'm excited about this offer. It's a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, sounds great. AJ, really happy for you. This is all great stuff. Certainly want to wish you all the best of luck to you as you make your decision ahead of the February signing period. Thanks for taking a few minutes of your time with us, and talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
So really happy for AJ. As you heard, he's going to take an official visit to Syracuse before deciding on whether to take that preferred walk-on offer from the Orange. He threw for 2,948 yards, 28 touchdowns, completing 71% of his passes in 2023 as Rye went 12-2 on the year. So definitely a lot of potential in his arm. We'll see how his recruitment plays out. And we will take a quick break, and we'll be back to wrap things up here on the Juice on the Cuse podcast. And I'm Wes Chang.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Juice on the Cues podcast here on the Believe Network as well as Rivals.com. Matt D'Agostino alongside Wes Chang. And we talk a lot about the Syracuse basketball program, the Syracuse football program. But let's give some love to the Syracuse women's basketball program. 15-2 on the season right now, including 11-0 at home. Their latest win, a win against Florida State on Thursday, where Felicia Leggett Jack and a company definitely riding the wave of De'Asia Fair, 31 points, a season high for her, 9 triples. And tell me if you've heard of these names, Wes. Here's who she passed on the all-time scoring list in women's college basketball history on Thursday. Cheryl Miller, not too shabby. Shamiqua Holdsclaw, yeah, she was good. And Maya Moore, pretty dang good in her own right. She passed all of them on Thursday. 3,038 career points now, and she's just 2 points behind Elena Deladon for 11th all-time on the list. Kelsey Plum is the all-time leader at 3,527 points, so she's a little less than 500 points behind that. Caitlin Clark is the only active member currently in the top 10. I believe she's at number 5. But De'Asia Fair has now been the leading scorer for Syracuse in 6 straight and 8 of the last 9. And while they're not ranked in the top 25 in the AP poll, they are 25 in the coaches poll as we look forward to getting some new rankings on Monday. But Syracuse in bracketology on the women's side projected as a 6th seed right now in the NCAA tournament. So good things going on in the women's program as well as the men's program as of late.
Matt, if you have been a Syracuse fan that's attended a basketball game, men's or women's, in the the JMA Wireless Dome.
Old habits die hard, Wesley. Old habits die hard.
You've been given a treat because combined between the two teams, they are a perfect 20-0 at home. They have not lost a single game between the two teams this season. So really impressive and very happy for Fair as she continues to climb the ranks. So, Matt, I was talking about the need to root for Pitt earlier in the podcast, now that Syracuse has swept the home-and-home regular season series against the Panthers. Well, if you were watching the Duke-Pitt game on Saturday, you'll know that the Panthers upset the Dukies at Cameron Indoor Stadium. That's a very rare win. So Pitt came into that game 82nd in the net rankings, and after the win, they're back up to 68. So the implications for Syracuse are huge because that restored Syracuse's win at Pitt as its lone quad one win of the season. And I also want to let the listeners know to keep an eye out on Oregon, which for a short period of time was 50th in net. That would also award Syracuse a quad one win, since a quad one win awarded to a win over a top 50 team on a neutral court. You guys still with me?
No, not at all.
So they're currently 58th after a loss to Colorado. They were riding a 6-game win streak that had them up to 50th in net. So the key number to take away from this is if they are 50th and better in net, then Syracuse has another quad one win. If Pitt is 75th or better in net, that's another quad one win. Those are the two teams that you really need to watch, that you really need to root for, and watch that 50th and 75 net rank number, because that's really good, what's going to help Syracuse on Selection Sunday. So those are the two teams Syracuse absolutely needs to be rooting for the remainder of the year.
If you say so, Wesley, I'll take your word for it. I do want to finish out on this. Now, Wes, I know you are a very learned man. We can tell by all the leather-bound books behind you right now. A little trivia for you. When was the last buzzer beater before Quiddier Copeland's on Saturday in Syracuse basketball lore? And do you know who took the shot?
It would be Tyus Battle in 2017 against Georgetown.
Ooh. It's not correct. You had the year right.
I had the year right. Okay.
You had the year right. It was John Gillen at the Dome against Duke, if you remember that.
Wow. Okay. All right. All right.
We may have to revoke a couple of your certifications, of which I know there are plenty on your resume, but better luck next time. Hey, if we stump Wes, it was a good question. It was a very good question. So Quadir Copeland stamps his name in Syracuse lore with a buzzer-beating shot against Miami to beat them 72-69. Another podcast in the books here, Wesley. Nicely done by you. Mediocre job by me. I'll look for improvement, as always. But, you are the class of this podcast for sure. So for Wes – I'm Dags, Juice on the Cues podcast on the Bleav Network and Rivals.com. Thanks for tuning in.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.